Welcome to the Ether. Today is Wednesday, November 16th, 2022. Today on the Ether, This Week in Crypto with Brian Armstrong and Ryan Selkis, hosted by Coinbase. Let's take a listen.
All right. Thanks, everyone. So it's been quite a week in crypto, and I thought it'd be a good chance to jump on here and talk about everything that's happened. I'm here today with Ryan Selkis. As many of you know, he's the co-founder and CEO of Messari and a true thought leader in the ecosystem. Got a few topics we're going to chat about, and then we'll jump into some of your questions from the audience. So start thinking about any questions that you might have. And as we get a little bit later here, we'll have you post them in the chat. So Ryan, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, sir. It's been a week.
I saw you earlier and you were wearing a tie. I was wearing a tie. Why are so many people in crypto wearing ties right
now? Well, look, it was a damaging week, I think, for the industry and our reputation. And it comes at a pivotal moment in policy circles when we were making some pretty good headway in terms of a couple of different really important bills that were under consideration. The CCPA in particular, which you know talks quite a bit about exchange oversight and kind of consumer protections in the markets. And we were, you know, we and I know, you know, your team and many others have been spending a lot of time down here kind of investing in relationships with policymakers, staff, regulators, trying to get them educated about the industry. That's been true for the last 9 years, really, that I've been in, and I know same for you. But it's really kicked into high gear this year. And it seemed like there was a lot of momentum for some of these, you know, really important pieces of legislation. And now we've gone from having, I think, a number of really constructive conversations to now just kind of measuring and managing the fallout of last week and making sure that we can, you know, kind of pick up the pieces, tell the right story and build towards, you know, the future and fix some of these problems that, that, you know, led to some of the issues we saw last week. But, you know, disappointing, but, you know, you and I have lived through multiple depressions, right? And, you know, I don't know how many people on the call have lived through an actual recession like 2008 and multiple crypto depressions and kind of lived to tell the tale, but you got at least two of them, and I think I speak for myself, but I think you're in the same boat as me, Brian, where I expect to be here for a little bit yet. So it's definitely a setback, but I don't think the fundamental 10-year thesis has changed for us, for the industry, and now it's just on people to step up and fix some of these issues that that arose out of the wreckage of last week.
Absolutely. Yeah. Crypto's not going anywhere. We're going to keep building. We've been through lots of crypto cycles, but you know, when I've talked to the media and everything, they're really most interested in the story right now of SBF and FTX. And I don't know, I'm almost at a place, I'm not sure if you are too, where I just kind of want to turn the page and let's not mention his name at this point going forward. I think that the other
You just broke your own rule.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the other topics, the implications of this and how we move forward are almost more interesting, but just to give, you know, just to give you a chance, is there anything you want to say about what actually happened with FTX or before we move on to the broader topics, or let's just get those out of the way?
No, I don't think that we need to spend any time talking about criminals and fraud. I have full faith that, you know, the various law enforcement agencies have ample evidence and are going to be able to do their jobs constructively. And, you know, we'll see a resolution on that front, but, you know, the justice, system, you know, takes some time. And so I think, you know, that's really not any of our concern, I think, as folks that are kind of leading in the industry right now. It's how do we move forward? How do we highlight the folks that are building that have been working responsibly and in good faith and really innovating at the bleeding edge of what's going to be an important part of the economy? And you know, we move on. It's a setback, but it's, you know, there's going to be, you know, criminals in any industry. As long as, you know, people are able to kind of sober up and keep that in mind, like I said, the structural thesis doesn't really change, but I think what does change are the, you know, kind of the days of lack of regulatory certainty and kind of policy guidance. I do think that there's more urgency to kind of get intermediary regulations really, really clarified. And that's going to be, I think, a net positive for, you know, for someone like Coinbase, for you know, all of your investors and folks that are interacting with the services, for the other kind of credible services in the US. And ultimately, it'll hopefully re-onshore some activity that, you know, frankly, if that had already been the case, we wouldn't be running into these problems that are largely the result of, you know, malfeasance in international entities with like jurisdictions.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, I mean, partly I'm surprised that SBF is not in custody yet. It's surprising. I mean, I assume they're kind of building the case against him, and not just him, but sort of the other executives there who may have perpetrated that fraud. But as the law enforcement kind of works all those things out, I think you're right. The most interesting thing right now in crypto, the whole ball game really, is about where's regulation going to go from here? And there is this knee-jerk reaction that we're seeing where, you know, as predicted, some people would come out and say, oh, we've got to have tougher and tougher regulation. Well, you know, this exchange was not based in the US or in a major market like UK or Singapore or Hong Kong. It was offshore in a jurisdiction that didn't have the sophistication to really manage this. And so the lack of regulatory clarity, I think, in the major markets actually pushed a lot of this stuff offshore into these jurisdictions, which didn't help. And I think it may be worth talking about. I know you've been a big advocate behind the scenes of getting that regulatory clarity here in the US. And there's some bright spots, right? You know, this Congress, we've seen 20 new members in the House and the Senate in the US who are pro-crypto. We've seen strong bipartisan support for bills that have been going through there, like the DCCPA, although, you know, it'd be great to hear your thoughts on its chances now or what the next evolution of that will be. And, you know, stablecoin regulation, centralized custodians and exchanges, these things all, everybody can pretty much agree these should be regulated. You know, let's get the bread and butter, you know, the basic stuff there. And then we can go figure out, you know, DeFi and all that stuff maybe another time and preserve the innovation potential of it for a while, because the decentralized to offer a way to get to an even better outcome here over time. So, how to go forward on the regulatory front?
Well, you know, I mean, there's one interesting little caveat here. You know, we're talking about DeFi and personal wallets and you know, some of the things that I think are really core to, you know, folks that have been in crypto for a while, the ability to self-custody, the ability to interact with these protocols without permission. And one of the great ironies is, you know, Ledger, the wallet company, actually has an integration with FTX that allowed their customers to trade seamlessly, leverage the FTX order book, and never leave their Ledger, with the exception of the single transaction at the time that an order was filled, right? Their customers were not impacted, right? So a lot of this kind of comes down to custody and trust. And if you're going to have these custodial models, and I think they are important and we're going to need them to be kind of overseen and well regulated in order to hit a next, you know, certain level of adoption. But I do think that you need to have custody and exchange oversight and some clarity as to who the regulator of record is, number one. Number two, just some clear guidance around not only stable coins and their reserves, but how they're expected to interoperate with the regulated financial system. And then the third, you know, I call this the messy middle. It's how do you treat these assets, right? Like DCCPA was not necessarily going to define what was a commodity versus a currency versus a security, right? But that's going to be a work in progress. And there are certain things that I think we as an industry can do to, you know, promote transparency, to you know, create some disclosure standards similar to what Commissioner Peirce at the SEC had actually advocated for with the safe harbor proposal that she put forth. And I think that kind of strikes the right balance between let's protect people from information asymmetries and kind of bad investments without kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater and essentially crippling innovation or teams' ability to get projects off the ground from zero to one. You know, if this SEC chair had been chair when the Ethereum crowd sale took place, Ethereum probably wouldn't exist right now. I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. You know, I think that is the most obvious example of a lack of temperance out of the regulators today. And it's one of the reasons that I do think we need, you know, really thoughtful policymakers to get the legislation right and also, you know, kind of create regulatory parameters at the point that these things are actually material and mainstream. Right? Exchanges are mainstream. Stable coins are now mainstream. DeFi is 2 years old. NFTs are 2 years old, right? Some of these other assets in emerging ecosystems haven't even been launched yet. So getting to a point where we have the things that are obvious to regulate and that would actually, you know, protect investors, right? And you know, kind of uphold the spirit of existing kind of consumer protection and kind of securities and you know, other markets-based regulation, I think is a very obvious starting point. And I still think that's on the table. But we just need to kind of wait and see, you know, with respect to DCCPA, you know, is it the right time to try to slam this through in the next few weeks during a lame duck Congress? Or should we kind of investigate what happened, measure twice, cut once, and then get this policy right kind of early on in the new year with the new Congress? And I think it's the latter.
Yeah, I think I agree. There's an opportunity to come together early next year and start again. And I know there's a bunch of people in Congress that we've spoken to who are really excited to do that. And I think you're right. My hope is that we can, as an industry and policymakers, regulators, they can use this moment as an opportunity to say, all right, hey, we need to come and create this regulatory clarity with some sense of urgency while preserving the innovation potential of self-custodial wallets and DeFi and all these things. Let's just go regulate the centralized exchanges and custodians. And that's where many of these issues have been happening so far. And if we don't get it regulated, you know, here in the US and other major markets, UK, et cetera, this stuff is going to go offshore and customers are going to be harmed and investors are going to be harmed. And the local businesses are going to be harmed too. So hopefully we can use it as an opportunity to go do that.
Yeah. And one other thing that I'll add, Brian, and I know there was a question about this that we were going to get to in a minute, but I mean, you know, the one thing that the SEC has done is under this chair has been to reject spot ETFs that I think are healthy for the institutional market. And it's created a dynamic where one company, you know, Grayscale in particular, has had this side door ETF vehicle for the last couple of years that has been underwater relative to the underlying asset value in the trusts. And it's a really complex setup. I've written about it before. But the punchline is that GBTC has been a toxic piece of collateral that helped lead to Three Arrows Capital undoing, BlockFi's undoing, and then in turn Genesis's problems in Q2. And now it looks like Genesis problems again today, and potentially FTX's problems because they bailed out a bunch of these different entities. And one of the first dominoes was this toxic bit of collateral GBTC. That is the sole contribution in my eyes of the SEC today to the crypto industry. And that's what happens when you have subpar regulatory regimes and subpar guidance on the part of policymakers. So, you know, this is an instance of a criminal activity on the one hand, and regulatory uncertainty and bad policy that has pushed people overseas. And when they have been domestic, created these really toxic assets or structures that are really a symptom of kind of the underlying, you know, root cause, which is bad policy. And I think that's what we all want to solve for, people that have been in the industry for a while and the policymakers that have been informed by this and given more than just a cursory view of the industry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to move forward here without talking about the SEC a little bit. And I mean, I'm curious, what do you feel like is the motivation for Gensler by creating this sort of regulation by enforcement? Or, you know, there's been various speculation out there about his kind of relationship with FTX. And what do you think he's going to do or his reaction to this situation with FTX? I mean, how do you think this is all going to play out? I'm curious.
I do think that there's been a pretty significant breakdown in trust between the crypto market and the honest actors in the crypto market domestically and the current chair, right? That doesn't extend to the entire staff. In fact, you know, Chair Gensler might be, you know, relatively unique in how hostile he's been to progress and good faith dialogue. As we mentioned earlier, you know, Commissioner Peirce put forth a safe harbor proposal that she iterated on with industry was a dissenting voice when it came to the oversight and approval of the spot ETF market. I think, you know, there are many folks in DC, both sides of the aisle, that would like to see some clarity as to truly how do we define crypto securities, how do we define crypto commodities, and kind of how do we manage this kind of fluid middle. But I would say, you know, you have to isolate the problem and the institutional failure right now, which I think, you know, in large part falls in Chair Gensler's feet. I think he in particular, with his attitude towards the industry, has been, you know, asleep at the wheel when it comes to two of the SEC's three core pillars, and that's protecting investors and ensuring fair and efficient markets, not to mention promoting capital formation. So actually he's 0-for-3. But beyond him, right, I do think that, you know, you and your team and me and my team and many others have met a ton of folks down in DC, at the regulators, at the congressional and Senate staffs. And, you know, we know a lot of folks, most folks, are working with, under kind of good faith assumptions and trying to get this right. And it's not easy tech to come up the learning curve on because it's changing like every year, right? I've been doing this for a decade. It takes me a month to just do a recap of the industry every year, as you know. So I think we need to acknowledge that, but we also need to make sure that the folks that have been vocal and negative and ultimately partly responsible for some of these breakdowns aren't the ones that are rewarded with more authority in the process.
Yeah. I think that's well said. Yeah, well, we have found our conversations with the SEC staff to be very productive. We're continually in dialogue with them. I'd like to help, you know, I'd like to work with the SEC to get more of that regulatory clarity and kind of reestablish that trust with Chair Gensler and every regulator out there, the CFTC, you know, Treasury, all the state money transmission, NYDFS, et cetera, where we have good relationships today. The one that's been a little bit tougher has been the SEC, and I'd like to fix that going forward. And so I'll be doing my part to see what we can do.
This really shouldn't be antagonistic, right? But right. It is antagonistic if the choice is, you know, come and talk to us and you're going to leave with a Wells notice, or, you know, come and talk to us and the answer is no, right? So it's not innovation friendly. It's not, you know, consumer friendly, because all that it's done, and this is provably so, is push a lot of this activity into more opaque markets and still hurt, you know, American investors in the process. So, I think everybody is cautiously optimistic, but, you know, we also need leadership at some of the regulators, including the one I just mentioned, to actually show good faith and uphold their agency's mandates over their kind of personal political aspirations.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think one just simple thing that would be productive is if the CFTC and the SEC could come together, you know, maybe over an afternoon, they could almost just kind of write down, like, you know, these are the ones we believe are securities, these are the ones we believe are commodities, you know, and if there's some which are probably borderline, the courts may have to figure that out, or if the line is not drawn in a reasonable way, people would challenge it. But just putting out that list would help a lot of this this get unblocked and move forward. And there would be clear regulatory frameworks just from that alone, or at least guidance, you know, you could say Congress would want to have oversight of it and things like that. Just something, you know, like that would help it move forward.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, you look at the CFTC is a really good example and kind of counterpoint here, because I think Chair Benham has been very constructive. Right. And that's by no means saying that is a quote unquote, like, easy regulator. Right. It's not like it is going to be a trivial oversight regime that big crypto companies that are regulated by the CFTC are going to have to come up under and comply with. But there's actual good faith dialogue, I think, that's been had there. And it stands in stark contrast to what we've seen out of the SEC or the SEC leadership in particular.
Right. I agree. I am totally fine with tough rules, tough regulation, as long as it's clear. And that's the problem is right now, there aren't clear rules. And so everyone in the space is basically paying insane legal bills to get this advice. Some of that legal advice is telling them asset issuers and startups to go offshore. Literally, I mean, that's what the most expensive white shoe law firms are sometimes telling these asset issuers and startups is like, well, you don't do anything in the US or list on a US exchange because, you know, it's just unclear. And so that chilling effect really does have a major impact for the businesses trying to build here, trying to follow the rules. And then, you know, for the customers, the American investors who end up going to these overseas products. So anyway, I think we've covered that one. Let's, one or two more questions, and then anybody who has a thought, please, you know, post it here as a tweet. Our team's going to be reading it. We'll jump in and answer some of the audience Q&A here as well. But I mean, Ryan, what else are you noticing? Are institutional investors, are you hearing anything there about, you know, their willingness to onboard to the space or waiting for the bottom of the market, you know, is what do you think we can do as an industry to sort of prevent any future bad actors coming into this space too? Anything else you want to touch on there?
Well, I think that there's going to be a lot of work done the next couple of months on trying to get thoughtful policy enacted. Just to be clear, I mean, policy is inevitable, right? You can have two types of policy. One, you can have regulation by enforcement in another couple of years of uncertainty and litigation with some of the overreaching regulators, or you can have balanced legislation that covers some of these low-hanging fruit issues. And obviously, we're all hoping for the latter. But you know, beyond any particular piece of legislation, I think the industry just needs to get better standards. But frankly, I mean, we've been talking about this in Messari for 5 years, right, in terms of transparency standards for asset issuers. But I think that extends further to exchanges, custodians, lenders, right? Something like not just proof of reserves, but proof of reserves and liabilities. And I know a couple of really smart people that are about to come out with some thoughts on how to do, you know, proof of net assets, which would include liabilities and not just assets. And I think, you know, the fact that we can do some of these things on chain is interesting and necessary in order to regain trust. So that's why I brought up the ledger example at the onset, right? The ability to give people control or give people kind of provable access to information that kind of shows the balance sheet and financial condition of someone that they're trusting as a custodian, I think is really important. So you either need control or you need like radical information transparency. And I think part of that, you know, kind of information transparency will be kind of guided by, you know, oversight and regulation and some good policy. But, you know, it honestly, it's going to be tough, I think, to move forward and have true productive institutional conversations and kind of open up that side of the market until we solve some of these trust issues. Because, you know, last week, I think, was a huge setback in terms of trust. You know, you had one person that was very active on the investing side, on the policy side, and on the crypto infrastructure side with the exchange. And, you know, that one person was a criminal and you know, made a lot of people look silly in Washington, D.C. And that is one thing that doesn't go over well, is to, you know, make people that have spent time and energy trying to engage and get smart on this. And come up with a thoughtful framework, you know, basically make them look bad because they were, you know, among the folks that were hoodwinked. And so I think you know, can't underestimate the importance of standard setting and also making sure that like other leaders in the industry, not just the exchanges, but like other leaders in the industry are spending much more time down here educating folks on the technology, the use cases, the potential, and ultimately the impact on the economy and potentially on individual users. You know, I'm in DC right now for the Blockchain Association Summit. There's a really good event coming up in a little while with a ton of legislative aides and legislative, you know, directors basically showcasing some of the applications that have been built and some of the kind of opportunities that exist in the market, just like a little bit of a show and tell segment. And I think things like that are going to have to be a priority for anyone that's, you know, kind of leading their companies and I think the market through the other side of this.
Makes sense. Yeah, I'm really excited about I think the combination of things going forward, which is, okay, great. You know, we can have sort of using TradFi best in practice stuff. Okay, that's great. And, you know, Coinbase is a public company, so we have audited financials from a big four firm. That's a great start. But how do we actually use the native tools in crypto to get even more and more surety on this stuff over time? And we've seen the evolution of this start to happen with proof of assets. But then, of course, if you have the assets without the liabilities, it's not really that useful. We've seen people come up with really clever schemes around, you know, getting the liability side as well baked in there with Merkle trees and whatnot. There's other challenges with that we've seen where people, you know, in theory, you could have kind of a negative balance baked into the Merkle tree to sort of cancel something out that's not supposed to be there. So maybe you need to use a third party to do it. I basically think, you know, I know Vitalik and Balaji are actually working on a couple of different papers or posts right now about how this concept of on-chain accounting could really evolve over time. And I think, you know, using self-custodial wallets where just everything's on-chain, you know, using DeFi smart contracts where everything's auditable in the actual code, these are really powerful tools. And eventually you'll be able to, you know, there's going to be a, I don't know, TurboTax for on-chain accounting, or you know, the, I don't know what you'd call it, like the Deloitte of or whatever, one of the big accounting firms will have sort of, there'll be this probably a new startup that's just based around on-chain accounting based on cryptographic signatures. which would be a huge step in the right direction. So yeah, hopefully all these things are going to continue to be researched, and that's a really cool development. Okay, so Ryan, let's go to the listeners here, and if people have other questions, you know, use the tool here in Spaces, Twitter Spaces, to go tweet out your question. We'll try to get through a handful of them. So let's see, there's one here from KB versus the world. Hey, does Coinbase have any exposure to Genesis or DCG? A user of the platform would like to know. So the answer to that is no, Coinbase doesn't have any exposure to Genesis or DCG. Thank you for asking that. Let's see. Brandon.
Ryan, is Coinbase still the custodian of Grayscale assets?
I'm not sure if we're allowed to talk about that publicly. I'd have to go check.
I thought that was in the public filing. So anyway, maybe someone on your team will Slack you. But.
Yeah. Let me check on that and see what I'm allowed to say publicly first. Let's see. Establishing mainstream. This is from user Brandon TO930. Establishing mainstream trust in this space will be extremely difficult from here on out and nearly impossible short term. What is Coinbase's plan to continue building trust from here, from where we're at now? And then I'll answer, and then maybe Ryan, you can jump in as well about how you think we can do it more broadly, because obviously Coinbase is just one piece of this. So how can we establish trust? I mean, look, the first thing is I've been trying to get out there and really just, you know, you'd be surprised people who are not really in this space. I mean, they have a lot going on, right? This is something they only think about with a small percentage of their time. They might look at FTX and think, hey, well, that's representative of the whole industry, right? And so it sounds simple, but I think it's worth repeating. We just got to get out there as an industry and let people know that, no, there's a lot of legitimate actors and companies building great companies in this space. FTX is not representative. You know, occasionally the traditional financial system has things like Enron and Madoff and Lehman Brothers, and that is not causing us to, tear apart the entire traditional financial system. So this is similar. So just those simple messages work. I think we've also been very clear with people out there that for Coinbase, we're just a very different, you know, company than what FTX was. So we're registered right here in the United States. We're not in an offshore jurisdiction that has light scrutiny. We have audited financial statements. You don't have to take our word for it. You know, a third party has attested that we have customer funds backed one-to-one, entirely segregated. By the way, the auditing firms who do this stuff now, they actually have gotten more sophisticated in a little bit of what they do on chain. By the way, Ryan, we're getting a little bit of background noise. Maybe you can mute the sign. So for instance, you know, Deloitte in this case, when they come in and audit our cold storage reserves, they'll do what's called random sampling. So they'll say, okay, you claim to own these addresses, and you know, they'll randomly choose some of them and ask us to, you know, provably restore those and move them and rotate the keys. And so one of the, you know, ways our cold storage is architected is actually, you know, when we bring the shards of keys together, we don't want to leave it there because the security has sort of is in a different state once you've done that. So we basically use those addresses as one-time use, and for in an audit, we'll restore them, move them, and then rotate those keys so we don't have to use them again in the future. So anyway, those sort of TradFi type audits are a really powerful and important piece of the puzzle. I think Coinbase is kind of, you know, the best in class here as a public company that we've just met in an entirely different standard than what others have been able to do out there. And then, like I said, over time, it's about investing more and more in these kind of on-chain accounting tools and seeing those mature so that they can mitigate some of the weaknesses of it, show the assets and the liabilities. And I think that's an important thing that we need to look into as well. Ryan, anything you want to add about how we restore trust as an industry going forward?
Well, you know, I think the issues around trust will dissipate with time, right? And with tools that enhance our credibility, right? So a lot of the things, Brian, that you just mentioned. I will say you never know where the next catalyst is going to come from. In 2020, it was, you know, the stimulus and kind of coming out of COVID lockdowns with these trillions of dollars of new assets that were printed. And Bitcoin was kind of a leading indicator of the expansion of the money supply and you know, how people would respond to that in terms of protecting their purchasing power. We just had the Ethereum merge, right? Transformational for that ecosystem in terms of de-risking that blockchain long-term. A few years ago, we didn't have DeFi, NFTs, decentralized storage, you know, a ton of these other building blocks, DAOs, right? And so with those tools and those different kind of building blocks in their infancy, it's just going to take a little bit of time and energy to build the applications that will actually kind of cross the chasm. And you needed scalability on chain so the transaction fees weren't sky high. You needed some governance structures in place. You needed some kind of financial primitives in place to make this all work. And you know, there are a number of applications and tailwinds that I think could, you know, ultimately create a nice virtuous cycle when it comes to adoption at some point, you know, kind of moving forward. If there's, you know, a currency failure internationally, you know, there could be some kind of tailwinds for Bitcoin as a reserve asset again, because I think that most discerning investors will look at Bitcoin, the asset and the protocol, and not necessarily a single entity that was fraudulent when they're making that decision about, you know, how to you know, kind of invest their portfolios. So I guess the answer is you don't really know. And I mean, think about how negative everyone was in March 2020, right? You didn't know what was going to happen. It was, you know, we were kind of in the fog of war with COVID, and people didn't know what would happen with the economy. People didn't know, you know, what was going to happen with the virus itself. So, you know, it was really difficult to make rational long-term decisions and kind of think beyond the 6 days or 6 weeks in front of your face at that point. And you know, the crisis passed. So I guess the moral of the story is like life kind of goes on, and a lot of times these crises pass. Law is permanent though, right? So I think the one thing that will be a setback in the US, in Europe, in Asia, is if, you know, this single entity or, you know, a handful of bad actors are able to set us back when it comes to permanent law and kind of changing the defaults in the wrong direction when it comes to, you know, fostering, you know, innovation around the space and guardrails. So, you know, that might end up being a battle for the next 6 months, depending on which way the political winds blow. I think most of us are cautiously optimistic. This is still a, you know, an issue that has bipartisan support. It's nonpartisan tech. And as long as cooler heads can prevail and we can get through the other side of what's going to be a pretty choppy, you know, kind of policy environment, I think that we'll be just fine, right? It's probably going to be a couple of years, but it was probably going to be a couple of years anyway, because we're kind of staring, you know, down the barrel of a recession next year in the general market. So, you know, it's always a good time to be, you know, kind of building and actually, you know, kind of pushing the envelope on what is possible and where we can innovate. But the difference between this coming cycle and what I think we just came out of is that pushing the envelope on innovation should not mean taking shortcuts, putting customer funds at risk, and doing something, you know, or anything that you know whiffs of fraud or you know unethical behavior on the part of a trusted third party. So, you know, this too shall pass. I think, you know, I'm already kind of looking forward, not to be sanguine about, you know, the state of play. I do think, you know, it is a setback, but, you know, we've been here for a while. We'll be here yet. And things are still in a much, much better, more secure place when it comes to human capital, financial capital, and the state of the tech than it was even 4 years ago. So that's a good foundation to build from, despite what happened last week.
Okay. Awesome. Let's see. We've got another question here from Peaks versus Valleys. Probably what we all want to know, and I haven't seen posted here, is Coin in Trouble. Coinbase, I assume they're referring to. How will the FTX debacle affect our holdings, or will they? And then are our holdings safe, basically? Yes, so Coin is not in trouble. We're very well capitalized. We've got $5 billion of cash on the balance sheet. We're holding those assets in dollars, which so we're not having exposure to the broader crypto volatility. We didn't have any material exposure to FTX or Alameda. And you can, as a public company, you can kind of go review our audited financial statements that, you know, we didn't create those. And it's done by a trusted, you know, a third party, a reputable firm, Deloitte in this case. And you can see that the customer funds are segregated. And so that's an important thing that people can go look at. There's another question here from DGenGenesis24. What areas of the crypto industry show the most potential in pushing the industry forward in the midst of the FTX fallout? So they mentioned a few here: infrastructure, L2s, gaming, NFTs. Ryan, what do you think? I mean, if usually in every crypto winter, we see the seeds of innovation planted that help in the next run up. And curious if you have any theories about what might kick that.
Yeah, I mean, I still think the like the, you know, not to get all cypherpunk, but I think the, you know, not your keys, not your crypto, and you know, the kind of the emphasis on decentralized protocols and on, you know, code over kind of trusted third parties. I still think that's really important, right? And the thing that I think holds us as an industry back is the user experience around that, and not, you know, sometimes trusted third parties are more trustworthy than trusted first parties, right? When you're talking about complex systems. So I think that when it comes to infrastructure, anything that can help kind of guide and educate users in terms of how they can, you know, kind of truly leverage these technologies for, you know, for their own kind of investments, for their own you know, kind of business uses. We talk about payments a lot and how broken kind of the financial rails are for many people that are underbanked or you know, don't have the same access to financial services. I think the next few years, you know, it's about taking those narratives and those dreams from, you know, the sandbox and kind of the narrative section and the pipe dream section, and actually putting some of those into effect, right? We have to be able to tell stories with data, not just, you know, stories with kind of aspirations. And I do think that the infrastructure that's been built kind of across the board is in such a markedly improved place versus where it was a few years ago, that we should start to see some of those, you know, some of the fruits of that labor collectively. We'll see, but, you know, it's gonna require, you know, human ingenuity and you know, I think really getting back to the basics in terms of what are the social norms within crypto? What are people, you know, actually working towards? Because, you know, not a knock on you know, my trader friends, and I know, you know, especially this big chunk of your customer base, but I think for a while, the last year and a half, we lost the plot, right? It became about how much money could we make as fast as humanly possible? How much could we farm? How much could we dump? What type of token economics could we, you know, incorporate in order to juice returns real quickly? And none of that was built with sustainability in mind. Even in the most kind of optimistic scenario, I think it was, you know, viewed as a necessary evil. And I think that ship has sailed now. And so the folks that will be rewarded are going to be those that are actually pushing the envelope, not on, you know, get rich quick schemes, but on like truly usable applications. And, you know, I remain optimistic that we're going to see quite a few in the next couple of years. So that's what's going to move us forward. And, you know, whether that takes a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, I think we have a much sturdier foundation versus 2014 when Mt. Gox went under, or 2018 when the market crashed and Ether went down 94%, right? I think the tools are there. It's just, you know, who's going to be, you know, brave enough to step up and build through the cycle.
Yeah. Makes sense. I think you're right. I some of the things that could really kick off this next wave of innovation in crypto, I think, from my point of view. So again, regulatory clarity, we already talked about. There's a lot of institutional money and whatnot waiting to move in there. And then, you know, I think scalability of the blockchains has gotten a little bit better. We've seen that with the merge, things like Lightning Network, other L2s. But if we can get the scalability up, I think that'll unlock a whole new set of use cases, just like moving from dial-up to broadband. And then a couple areas that I'm excited about. It does feel like something's in the air right now with decentralized social. We've seen people getting more and more interested in that with Twitter and various ways that it could evolve in the future. And there's really cool protocols out there like Farcaster and Lens protocol. Decentralized gaming, I think, is an interesting one. You know, what's happening out there with DAOs feels like that could be a big area as well. You know, I think NFTs will come back. I think that is an important long-term trend, not just for collectibles of different types of artwork, although that'll be one piece of it, but for all kinds of reasons. You know, proof of attendance, various forms of like citizenship, and even in this metaverse, you know, there's going to be all kinds, everything from your spaceship to your house to the clothes you wear, whatever. I mean, I think every game out there, people are going to want to have provably unique digital items that they're going to want to have, and so. Even the way that people just get paid for songs and video content creation, all kinds of things in the NFT space, that'll come back, I believe. Okay, so we just have a few more minutes. Let's do maybe one or two more questions. Let's see if there's, Ryan, if there's one that you really like, you can jump in too. But I'm just thinking here. Let's see. Question for my fearless leader, Two-Bit Idiot. can we get your updated take on GBTC and ETHE here? Assuming nothing Grayscale related has an issue, but yeah, what are your thoughts on those?
Well, I think the Grayscale, for Grayscale, the responsible thing right now is to pursue Reg M relief, which would essentially allow them to offer customer redemptions for assets that are held in trust. The way that those trusts work today, they're, Hotel California is where assets check in, they don't check out. And Grayscale, their strategy to date has been to, basically sue for peace and sue for, spot ETF approval from the SEC. I think in light of, what's going on with some of the related entities, and I think in light of the fact that the discounts on GBTC and some of the other trust assets are into the 40% range, and given the stress in the market, the potential leverage that was used to kind of juice those assets under management in 2020 and kind of early 2021 before that premium disappeared, I think it is it borders on reckless because the chances of a spot ETF approval for that particular product, I think, have just plummeted to about zero, approximately. Particularly given some of the counterparty risk that I think is now known and publicly documented between some of those related entities and GBTC as toxic collateral for some of these entities that have gone bankrupt. So, if you're talking about protecting investors, I think the responsible thing to do, and I hope Barry Silbert will show some leadership here, is to at least offer investors the opportunity to redeem those shares at fair value, particularly given how easy it is to one-click redeem and kind of move these from shares to, to actual Bitcoins or ETH that can be custodied elsewhere, whether it's Coinbase or whether it's a Ledger wallet or, wherever. And in the process, I think it would kind of make whole a number of investors that are currently 40% underwater. So we'll see what happens there. I think it is, I think it's a regulatory loophole that needs to be closed and fixed for the benefit of investors, because otherwise you could have an indefinite situation where individual investors are basically paying 2% for a 40% impaired asset with kind of no end in sight and basically forced choices between fire selling at a discount or just paying 2% in perpetuity and hoping and praying that this comes back. But I think we've seen no evidence to suggest that a spot ETF is on the horizon. So the right thing to do is make sure that we, at least give investors the ability to unwind some of their positions there and do what they see fit with the underlying assets.
Great. Okay, we've got one more question here, and then I'll turn it over to you to see if there's anything that you want to share on a more optimistic note to close out here. But Coinbase Corner asks, what's the easiest way for users to identify regulated companies versus offshore unregulated companies, which imply more assets, as we've seen? Is Coinbase considering a platform or mechanism to do or manage this, maybe via the Coinbase wallet browser? So I think it's important here to distinguish between, again, centralized players in crypto, which Coinbase's custodian and exchange are centralized, and then the decentralized pieces, which Coinbase also plays in this space. We have Coinbase Wallet, which is a great self-custodial offering. Again, not your keys, not your crypto. And it's important for people to understand more and more of that over time. And that allows them to also use things like this Coinbase Wallet browser, which allows you to access, Web3 apps dApps, basically decentralized apps. So we play in both of those spaces. And I think just broadly, we want to help people get fiat money into crypto. And then once they have crypto, they should be able to use it in the purely crypto-to-crypto, decentralized, self-custodial world through Coinbase products. And that's kind of the reason why we're doing this whole thing. We want there to be more economic freedom in the world. Trading, again, to Ryan's point, trading is a great business model for us and for others, but it's not the end goal here. Unlike maybe some other players out there, we think trading is important to help people get fiat in crypto and to have a developed trading marketplace there, a more established market structure. But it's not to be all end all. We want people to be able to do, earn a living, do commerce, engage in any kind of financial transaction they want, and completely non-financial related transactions. Things like, voting and identity and gaming and all decentralized social and all the apps that'll come out in that world too. So the question sort of asks, you know, how, what's the easiest way for users to identify these companies and not? I mean, look, if you're going to use an exchange, I think, you know, you should do that in a place where the thing has a local, if it's a centralized player, you should do it in a way that use a company that has a local entity that is regulated. And Coinbase is certainly one of those. We have entities in all the major markets, and we've sought out that kind of regulated, trusted approach. Again, as a public company, I think we're in a category of one there in terms of the level of scrutiny about on our financials and these public third-party audits that have been done. But you know, when it comes to using Coinbase Wallet Browser or doing some of the stuff in the DeFi world, self-custodial world, it shouldn't matter where those companies are located. You know, you do have to trust a little bit, I guess, the company building that software to make sure that there's not some kind of malware or injection into the code that you're using. But, you know, I think it's less a function of which country the thing is in at that point. And those products are going to be treated a little bit more like software products than financial service products because they're not actually taking custody of customer funds in those self-custodial wallets. So hopefully that's a good high-level overview. Let's see. Ryan, we can wrap it up here, and I'd love to hear anything that you are optimistic about for this industry. It's probably a moment where everybody could use a little bit of optimism. So what are your thoughts?
I am optimistic about everything. Nothing has changed in the 10-year thesis. The only thing that can stop this industry is, you know, just a consistent negative press cycle and not getting the right people kind of building solutions and having interest fizzle out, right? And frankly, I think losing some of the ethos of the early industry, right? So if we just kind of get back to basics and think about, you know, financial freedom, about, you know, kind of the innovation that can be unlocked with some of these technologies, and just give people time to build and actually, you know, develop products that are going to get into the hands of millions or billions of users, I think everything's going to be fine, right? And no one said this was going to be easy. Anyone that did was lying to you. And that hasn't changed from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, last year. It's always been the same, but we just kind of go through different hype cycles. So I will say, I think the market, you know, has rewarded, you know, pie in the sky vision and passion and kinetic energy. And I'm certainly, you know, someone that benefits from an emphasis on, you know, and forgiveness of passion and kinetic energy. But I do think we're going through a cycle where, Brian, you probably don't get enough credit for the steadiness and kind of conservatism and long-termism that that Coinbase has demonstrated and that you've personally demonstrated. So we're going to need more of that, I think, across the board. Hunker down and you know, we'll kind of be through the worst part of the storm soon, and that'll be the slow and steady rebuild.
Totally agree. Yeah, crypto is not going anywhere. There's really good people in this space. I mean, look at what happened to the internet, right? You know, there was a lot of hype. Things came down in 2001. The good companies built through that, Google, Amazon, you know, PayPal, and they came out much stronger on the other side. And I think Coinbase is going to be one of those companies, but we're not the only one. There's going to be a handful of them that actually not just survive, but thrive in this environment, because in every down market, there are opportunities as well. And, you know, I don't think it'll take as long, by the way, as the whole internet thing, the dot-com crash, and then it took a while to come back. But the world is moving faster and faster because the internet is built out now and it exists. And so we've been through these cycles that tend to happen much faster in crypto. I think we'll look back on this one in a few years as just one more that we lived through, and the next innovation cycle will be off to the races. So this is the time where the true believers hunker down and they keep building. You know, the missionaries stay and the mercenaries leave. And so I actually like the down periods even better. There's, it gets rid of the folks who are here just to make a quick buck, and we get to go back to building. So thanks everyone for tuning in. Ryan, thank you so much for joining and just for being such a great advocate of the space out there. We will keep working towards regulatory clarity and making crypto easier to use. Hopefully we'll have, you know, a billion or two people in the future using crypto all around the world and benefiting from this technology to create more economic freedom. So thank you, Ryan.
Let's fucking go.
I love it. All right. Thanks, y'all, for tuning in.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was This Week in Crypto with Brian Armstrong and Ryan Selkis, hosted by Coinbase. Recorded on Wednesday, November 16th, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. And if you want to keep listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show some support. Now, with more Spark IBC enabled. Go, Joe.
When I'm ripping and rapping, I ain't picking the bastards who be tricking the masses into getting their asses kicked. Feels like I've been getting my masters. Fuck, I'm pumping double like the income that's passive. Raise up the bar before I fly right past it. I'll be writing rhymes till they put me in a casket. Old man shit, put the lotion on its skin. Then put that shit back in the damn basket. Like Buffalo Bill, the way I'm ruffling feathers. Snuffing out debt, cut the heads off collectors. Keep a couple heads in a jar as keepsakes. And take the rest and turn them into free. Upgrade the feeling, supply the free base. Looking all professional, tools in the briefcase. Running on empty from gassing up my teammates. First one down, let me know how that sleep tastes.
Now places the lotion in the basket.
And impossible, defending the plausible from end to demonstrable. The mission isn't even worried about the clearance. Running interference till our enemies fear us. We're only one disappearance away from a bad day. Everybody trying to save face on the last day. Feeling fancy, about to pull out the masse. Drop the eight ball in passing, that's so passe. I'm getting nasty, you cannot put it past me. A mix between blasphemy and tuck everlasting. Feeling like a masterpiece, looking like a tragedy. Trying to get through another day full of savagery. Getting headstrong from working in the mess hall, all hands on deck, waiting for our next haul. I need the rest, got big plans to eject. So feed the grass and keep off the Kleenex.
I am interested in magic because I am fascinated with psychology. I love to learn about how people make inferences, how they draw conclusions and find patterns and information. And in particular, I'm interested in all that can go wrong. How an individual can be led astray by certain cognitive vulnerabilities or exploited.
Terror Spaces.